It's actually quite a privilege to stand here with you this morning and faces as you sing together that song, because that song speaks to so many people here. Some of you have gone through really difficult times, and some of you are worried about the future, and some of you don't know where you might turn next, and others have got great joy in your heart this morning. But in the midst of all this, we have this great anchor. You know the Boys Brigade song, "We Have an Anchor." This anchor holds us firm. This is the anchor that brings us back to where we should be in our lives. Jesus Christ, the great foundation, the rock on which we can never perish if we cast our anchor there. And that anchor is the anchor that seeks to bring unity into the life of the church. It's fascinating. I've often said this to you, and those of you who remember it will remember it, and those of you who forget, well, maybe you'll remember. When John Knox was dying, and he was in that house on the Royal Mile where he died, he said to his young wife — the amazing thing is, too, Knox was an older man, and he'd married the second time, and he'd married a young woman — he said to her, "Read to me the scripture from where I first cast my anchor." And she knew where to read from. And she read from John chapter 17, which is all about the unity of the church. It's amazing, isn't it, that Knox, who is seen as the one who brought division, had at the very heart a desire to bring about the unity of the church. The most important thing we can learn as God's people today is how much we are loved by God. I cannot emphasize that enough to you, and if I tell you this every week, if I tell you it every day, I will not tell you it enough, because all of us live our lives thinking that we are not loved by God, and all of us live our lives knowing how challenging it is, because we see ourselves as people who fail. And the gospel is about the God who sees us and loves us in the midst of our failure. Now, last week, Sheena was talking about what it means to live the life of the loved one. We were talking about that in connection with this amazing passage, you know, the passage in where Jesus hears the voice of the Father saying, "You are my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." And it's because Jesus recognized that he was loved so much by the Father that he could go to the cross, that he could endure so much, because he was loved by his Father, and that was what held him, and that's what sustained him. And you know, love is the amazing thing that sustains you if you know you are loved. If you know that the person you're with will never leave you nor forsake you, but will stay with you. This is what I try to tell young people who are not married but love one another and living together. I say to them this all the time. Why do you settle for less? Why do you not make it publicly known that you love one another? Why will you not make it a marriage? Rather, why will you not make her your wife rather than your partner? I'm so proud when I introduced Martha as my wife. Why would I introduce her as my partner when I could introduce her as my wife? Love demands the best for us. And if we love one another, why not give one another the best? Give ourselves one another. I'm going to write more about this because I think I'm onto something here. I'm going to write more about it in the papers, and I think we're going to have marriages all around the country when people remember and hear about this. It's not a criticism of those who live together. It's just that they haven't grasped how wonderful marriage can be. But that's me again diverting. This is old age. I'll need to stop this. But you know, sometimes if you are loved and you feel loved, you can become persecuted. You can feel that sense of persecution. Always remember this, that loved people can become persecuted. Like, think of the story of Joseph. Joseph basked in the love of his father, and yet his brothers became jealous of him. Now, people interpret the story of Joseph that he was arrogant and proud, but that's an interpretation. It could be very well that Joseph was an innocent man, a young man who just knew what it was to be loved, and naively thought his brothers loved him. Often if a man or a woman begin to live something of the life of a loved one, they become despised and rejected by others. What is it about you? You're too nice. How often have you heard that? Somebody say, he's just a bit too nice. Or she's just a bit too good. What is it? There's something underneath all that. What do they want? Jesus was the one who was loved by his Father, but he was also despised and rejected by men. He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. So living this life of the loved one is not just pure sweetness and light, but it can become a time of challenge. But let's say for most people we want to say this and long for this, that the life of a godly man or a woman will be a blessing and encouragement to those who live with them. Now what we need to understand is that living the life of the loved one ensures that we live out the fruit of the Spirit in our daily lives. That's what it's all about. How do we live out this goodness? And in this passage that was read this morning to us from Galatians chapter 5, I want us just to take a moment and just look at some of this. There is a comparison here that Paul is making when he's speaking about living the life of the Spirit. In chapter 5, verse 16, if you want, we can put some of these verses up if that's possible. Chapter 5, verse 16, "So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature." You see, what Paul is saying there is that all of us go through a period in our lives when we try to live godly lives, there is a struggle. There is an ongoing struggle all the time. There is a tension between doing what is right to doing what you feel, what you want to do, and what you know is right. And sometimes these do not all be the same thing. And someone recently said to me, "I just felt like going down and giving him a piece of my mind. I felt like punching his lights out." That's how I felt. But I knew it was the wrong thing to do. There is a tension in so many ways in our lives between how we feel and what is right. And the Bible speaks of this, and it says that that is part of the whole story of the human condition. There is a human condition called sinfulness. And you've got to ask yourself, do you believe this or do you not? And if you begin to believe that, then you begin to understand some of the struggles that you have in your life. And you see, they're in conflict with one another. That's the difficulty that people have. They say, "I've got a moral dilemma. I know what I should do, but I know what I want to do. And I know what my friends say, just do it. But can I live with myself if I do it? Well, I'll forget about it and I'll just go on with it. But is it the right thing to do?" But if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law, because the point here is that the Spirit of God lead you to do the right thing. And we'll talk a wee bit more about that later on. Now, Paul goes on to talk about the acts of the sinful nature are obvious. He says sexual immorality. You know, in the ancient world where Paul lived, not only was immorality condoned in the Roman and Greek world, it was regarded as essential to the everyday working life. It was all right to have as many illicit relationships as you could manage. It was completely acceptable. And Paul's saying here, that's not the way Christians are going to live. And indeed, if I was to say this, it's absolutely almost certain that the one thing that was so unique about Judaism and Christianity was this, that Judaism spoke of chastity. And that was a whole new virtue that was brought in to the ancient world. And people laughed at it. And it's funny today how people laugh at people who believe in chastity. Have you ever watched this on the programs, how people make a fool of someone if they say they're a virgin? They actually apologize for being a virgin. And in the soaps and all that, it's seen as though you're less than a right kind of person if you've not had a sexual liaison by a certain age. We live in this world. And our young people do not know, and sometimes as Christians we hold back from talking about these things. And those who believe in a different morality push. To the age of consent is down, and you've now got young girls of 12 and 13 having sexual encounters. Where do we draw the line? The Bible seeks to give us some direction in how we live our lives in these areas. He says this is the area where there's going to be tension. The sinful nature is obvious, sexual immorality. You know, Bill Clinton said about himself, he said, "My greatest sin was not that I committed adultery, but I knew I could do it, so I did it." You see, the greatest sin sometimes is knowing you can do something and doing it. But self-control is saying, because I can do this, it doesn't mean to say that it's right. Self-control says, no, I'm not doing that. And that's the work of the Spirit. I can't go through all of this. I've got it all in the sermon, but I'm going to jump because I think it's unfair to keep you all here all day, especially if you think you're getting a lecture on morality from Albert. But there's another area he talks about here. He says, they are in conflict with each other, but if you're led by the Spirit, the acts of sinful nature are obvious, sexual immorality, impurity. The word that's used for impurity is the word that is used for something that has not been cleaned up. Like it's the same word that is used for a tree that has not been pruned, that is overgrown and has become almost a briar and is just an overgrown fruit tree, but really needs to be pruned back, needs to be purified. It's the same word in the Greek that is used for a house in a contract. It's a word that's used in the contract law in passing a house on to say, this house is clean. It is clean. It's not dirty. It's not full of everybody's rubbish and all the family mess and everything like that. It's cleaned out. It's purified. The sinful nature brings about, takes us into these areas of impurity. Idolatry. There's another interesting one. Idolatry is not just about worshipping idols, but it's a much deeper thing. It's about materialism. It's about putting materialism, material things in the place of God. It's about not pursuing that spiritual part of you that draws you beyond materialism. And so often we worship at the seat of materialism. Now, let's all put our hands up to this because we've all done it. Have you ever been depressed, ladies and gentlemen, and fed up? And what do you say? I'm away shopping. And then you get more depressed. You come back and say, I couldn't get anything because I'm too fat. I've been eating too much. So I've been doing too much self-gratification. You see, all these things have been mentioned as things that stop us from engaging with God. It is not just sexuality. But in the right place, sexuality is a wonderful thing. It's a good thing. I could go on and talk about more of these challenging quarreling. Seeks to pull us apart. Rivalry, competing to win over the other for the sake of power. Paul's talking to Christian people. He's talking to people within the church. How often does that happen in little groups of people sitting in somebody else's rivalry? Someone else is not going to let them get their way. Someone else comes up with their view and you get quarreling. Jealousy is an interesting word. It comes from the Greek word zealous, which means emulation. And it means to emulate something good. But jealousy, it turns it around. It turns in on itself and it becomes a desire to have what is someone else's good, but you want it for yourself. Dissension is an interesting one as well. I'm jumping over some of these. I'm not going through them all. Dissension. The opposite of a band of brothers. You know, the band of brothers, a great program, great tele program. Everyone working together. Everyone doing their part. Great, great story. If ever you want to just look at something for a 15-part series on leadership, that's it. It's there. That's a tremendous piece of television, that series, Band of Brothers. But the opposite of that dissension is the opposite, where it flies everyone apart from one another. Seeks to just sow seeds of division. Sow seeds of division all along. Here's an interesting one in the midst of our troubles in the Church of Scotland at the moment as we struggle with the whole area of homosexuality and ministers being ordained. It talks here about division. And the word in the Greek for division is the word heresy. And the word heresy has an interesting root in the Greek because it's nothing to do with, in a sense, right or wrong. Heresy is about people with different viewpoints and different teachers teaching different philosophies and different heresies, different philosophies. And what we need to learn in the church is that we can disagree with one another and disagree with someone else's and dislike someone's ideas, not dislike them. And the trouble is that when someone says something that we dislike, we immediately dislike them. If we could learn not to do that, if we could learn to separate what someone says and what they sincerely believe, and them. Now, sometimes that's difficult because then they enact out the very thing that you dislike. And then that becomes a challenging thing for us. I'm going to finish with another one here, envy. It's from the Greek word pathonos, and it is the spirit that grudges the fact that someone has gifts or things, and it is to grieve that your neighbor's good fortune. How many people do that in Bowness? Why did they win the lottery? They grieve at it. They grieve at someone else's good. Look at it's all working out for them. Why does that happen for them and it's not for me? So this is a struggle that goes on, and these are the struggles that we all go through. And when we smile because we recognize ourselves in these things. And this is the nature, this is the dark side, this is the struggle that goes on in all of our lives. But living the kind of life of the loved one is the very opposite. You don't need law if you live by the Spirit, because the Spirit begins to change you. Look at what he says here. But the fruit of the Spirit, this is verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Can you imagine you've been taken up to court because of your kindness? You don't need a law for that because it's a good thing. Let me tell you something about this word love that's mentioned here in the Bible. It's quite a fascinating word. It's the word agape. And it's seldom ever used in Greek. In fact, if you look through many of the Greek manuscripts of classical Greek, you will not find this word. It is a hard word to find, but it's only found in the New Testament. And it's a fascinating word. You see, there are other words in the New Testament that speak of love. There is the word eros, and that's the love that a man has for a woman. It is a sexual love. It is a good love, but it is an earthly love. It's a sexual motivated love. And then there's philia, which is the love of someone that has for a brother. You know that good feeling, that warm feeling that we have for somebody who's a brother or a friend or a member of the family. You mention their name and you just glow inside. If you get members of family like that, you love like that, you just love them. But then there's this word agape, which means unconquerable benevolence. It doesn't matter what you do, I will still love you. I will not let you go. I will hold no conditions in the love. My love is for you as I love you, I love you, I love you. You will become part of my very being. You become an indispensable part of who I am. And sometimes that kind of love is best described in human nature, the love that Christ has for the church, but also it takes it into that whole area of marriage that two people have for one another. I sometimes say to couples that are coming to get married, will you try and outdo one another for love? And I remember when Martha and I were first married, you know that lovely gooey feeling you have when you've fallen in love with somebody, and you know the silly things you say to one another, and you go red in the face if you let anybody else hear it. Nobody's allowed to hear it. But you say silly things like, you know, I love you more than you love me. Oh no, it's impossible. I love you more than you love me. The kind of things we say to our children. How much do you love me? Do you ever say that to your children? When we are Christian people, we have this love of God. The Spirit begins to give this love in our hearts for one another. And that love begins to conquer so much. And if we can start to learn this and understand this in the next few years as we journey together as a church and recognize there will be people who will think differently from us, but if we live the lives of the loved ones, we will be able to live together. We might be able to discipline one another. We might be able to challenge one another. We might draw one another up. We might say, I cannot agree with you in this. This is not how it should be. But we need to learn to live together. Because the fruit of the Spirit is love, is joy. And this word joy is an interesting word. It's not the joy of winning something. Those of you who know me, you know fine well I don't agree with gambling. But sometimes you get thrown into a situation, and the best thing is it's the intention that's more important than what you do. Now, I know that's me now going into situational ethics, but let me give you a wee funny story this morning. Yesterday, it's all tied up with this because it's funny as well, and you can have a laugh at it. Yesterday, Marcus and Trudy have been raising money for Trudy's mum who's got Alzheimer's. And Trudy's young girls, the young women, got all their friends together, and they were having a fundraiser, and they said to Martha and I, you're our friends, will you come? And we turned up, and here it was a night at the races. You know, these races things. Now, I had a choice either to go on an old poor face and say, you know, I don't agree with Raffles, and I don't agree with this, and I want nothing to do with it, or I could just say, you know what? These people mean good by this, and it's going to help somebody's granny. So I'm going to help somebody's granny. So there you go, and I put on some of my bets, and I lost most things. But before I left, the thing I don't like doing here, I'm getting really soft in my old age, so please don't go. But I ended up, because of the cause, and I wasn't looking to win anything, but I even bought a raffle ticket, and I shouldn't have done it, I know. And this is confession time, Albert, with you all this morning. But it was a cause, so I wasn't looking for anything. Well, you'll never guess what I won in the raffle. I was left. I had gone. I was out the door. I was home. And Trudy phoned us up this morning. She said to Martha, I'll not tell Albert, but you could maybe tell him that Marcus took an executive decision that he wouldn't want the prize. So you're not wondering what the prize was. An evening with your pal at the pole dancing. So you can see that I'm glad that Marcus gave that one a body swerve on my behalf. How do we live the life of a loved one? How do we measure things in communities where you're involved in something, you're drawn in by friendship, and you become either so critical of something that you don't do any good for God, or you laugh at yourself and you make your own decisions at one point and say, that's the decision I made at that time, but it doesn't necessarily always say that everything is right down that line. What am I saying? I'm saying that we are called to be men and women who live godly lives, men and women who seek to live at peace with one another, men and women who have that sense of the peace of God in their life. You know, the word that is used for peace in Greek is Irene. It's a word that's sometimes used to someone's name, a woman's name. It talks about, it's almost like serenity. It is a sense of well-being that our times are in the hands of God. And all of you know that I have an orthodox view in this whole area of homosexuality. And I was speaking to a friend of mine at the assembly, and he said to me, he just smiled and he said to me, Albert, I'm not getting upset about all this. And he was doing a wee bit like what I did a few weeks ago, you know, when I said to you all, stop beating yourself up about how badly you're doing because God loves you. And how do you know that? And I looked at the page and I said, because he's written the last page of your life. And when your life is over, he's got something good. And all I can say is I believe in all of this, that Jesus wins. We know the end result is that Jesus wins. Jesus has his church in his hand and he holds us and he says, be faithful. And through the struggles, be faithful. Listen to one another, but be faithful. Be submissive. This word gentleness is be submissive to the will of God, but not too proud to be learned. It means be considerate. But above all, I'm going to finish with this. We need in our lives this whole area of self-control. It is to be master of ourselves in order to be the servant of others. And so this vying in our natures for doing the right thing and for living the right way means that we need to struggle sometimes, but we need to bring in self-control. And we need to be able to control our emotions, control our feelings, control the areas that we pull us down, the areas that we take us into to sin, in order that we might be the servants of others. And how can we do this? It's told you there at the very beginning, so I say to you, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of your sinful nature. Allow the Spirit of God to come and touch you this morning. Live by the Spirit. Walk by the Spirit. And talk through the Spirit. And we will begin to see the power of God at work in our lives. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.